Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing you excellent entertainment from the king of DC media. Here's the Inside Acting Radio Show.
Good evening, dear listeners. Tonight, I welcome actor extraordinaire and infinitely gifted Johnny Alonzo, who has appeared in such shows as Gotham, Dawson's Creek, All My Children, and Nightmare Next Door. And he has also appeared in such films as the suspenseful Coffin series. He is also one of the main hosts at NASA 360. You can learn more about him at www.johnnyalonzo.com. That's Johnny with two N's and Alonzo with an S. Also joining us tonight will be Patrick Barnett. Associate producer of Coffin 2. He also appeared in that series as the character Jack Sams. Now, Patrick is also an accomplished actor and singer. You could find him out at IMDb at Patrick Barnett. That's B-A-R-N-I-T-T. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. Then, you can also run out today. Go out there today and rent Coffin or Coffin 2. I've seen the first one. It is fantastic. It's very suspenseful. And Johnny's sort of a shady kind of guy in there. Go to Redbox.com or your local Redbox sitting on the corner at your local convenience store. Okay, so I see that Johnny has joined us, so I'm going to bring him on in and ask him a bunch of questions. Hey there, Johnny.
What's going on, man? How are you, William?
Man, I am fantastic. So, man, I hear this Coffin is doing well out there. It's getting sold out. It's doing so well. And there's definite plans for a third. So talk about that if you can.
Yeah, man. The Coffin franchise has just, it's exploded. It's fantastic. Since the premiere that we had a few months back in Beverly Hills at the Lemley, I mean, the film has just taken off like a rocket. So we're very excited. Coffin 2 was so much fun. I mean, it's of course the part 2, the Coffin, which we shot almost 6 years ago. So there was a big gap between Coffin and Coffin 2, and which we thought was going to be kind of an issue. We thought that was going to be it was going to work against us, but actually it worked out to our advantage because within all that time. Our audience grew and our fans and devoted fans just started chiming in and kept asking questions. When are we, you ended on a cliffhanger note, Coffin, come on, man, what's going on with the rest of the team? What happens? The trick and all this stuff. So we got the green light. Yeah, we got the green light from Artist View. I mean, from Skyrocket, and we put the Coffin 2 together, and the reception has been phenomenal, and Coffin 3 is now, it's been greenlit, and we're looking into shooting that the summer of 2018, man. Very excited, man.
Man, that's great. That's great, and it sounds like the premiere. It sounds like you had a lot of fun. You had a lot of press there.
Lots of press, lots of fun. We had a red carpet. The red carpet was set up right out front of the Lemley on Wilshire Boulevard, and it was awesome. I mean, you have like searchlights and paparazzi all over the place. Everyone's gonna say, who the hell is this over here? Yeah, like, oh, it's just Johnny Alonzo. Like, oh, no big deal. So, dude, it was awesome. It was a small screening. Like, it was very intimate. It was sold out, of course. And then after that, we had a theatrical run in Los Angeles. I think we had about a week, 7 days of Coffin 2 being in the theater, so that was cool. And then from there, it launched into Redbox, and I can't even say more about Redbox, man. They really helped us out domestically, and everyone's just been saying, "Hey, man, it's a really popular film because every time they go to the kiosk or they try to find it, it's always sold out." So that's good for us. At the same time, it's like I wish that Redbox bought more DVDs so they just could have had it more in circulation. But hopefully in Coffin 3, they'll figure it out and get 10 per red kiosk box or whatever versus the 6 or whatever they got. So we're still very grateful for it, man. It's good stuff, man.
Yeah. So now you've got a lot of good projects coming up, man. You got the Riddle House with Tracy Fairway. You got Hide and Seek on the horizon, The Driver. I mean, there's so many things that have either been done or in post-production. Talk about those.
Yeah, man. You know, the thing that people don't sometimes see, if you're not in the business, is that all these credits that we're working on or that we just finished, I mean, this stuff was shot about a year ago. Or you've been wheeling and dealing in interviews. Yeah, man, you've been wheeling and dealing in interviews with auditions and talking to producers and, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, all this stuff has been happening. You know, it's active. So it's like if you don't hear from us, it's only because we are working to work. And, yeah, like Hide and Seek, that was awesome. Shoshana Rosenbaum, one talented director and writer. I shot that, brother, in D.C. I shot that in Washington, D.C. And it was a collected group of filmmakers and directors and cinematographers. They were all from Washington. It was all the women in film and video crew. And I had such a blast on the set. I got to work with Asher, who was my film daughter, and she's one talented actress, and the script is it's very twisted, it's very Twilight Zone-y. You know, it's really going to get you, and it was a script that I just couldn't say no to. I'm playing a rock and roll dad. I mean, God, man, why not? It was,
turn that down.
I kind of have the hair for it, so they were like, yeah, man, I guess you're booked. So I nailed that, man, and I really enjoyed my time on that set. I mean, I can't say enough about it. I mean, it was a short piece. So I'm hoping in the future, if Shoshana's listening, which I think she is, maybe we can make a full-length feature out of it. Because really, once again, just like Coffin, it left you on that note, like, what is going on? So I like intelligent writing, and I like stuff that just, you know, takes you for a twist. So those guys are fantastic. Yes, The Riddle House was a project that was brought up to me when Coffin was screening back in August. We did a screen at Scare LA, huge, huge Halloween event. It's like the Halloween event of the summer in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it was great, man. And this producer, writer, very talented guy, Edward Abramson, came up to me. He's like, Johnny Alonso. I'm like, yeah, who the hell are you? He's like, I'm Edward, man, Edward Abramson. I'm a fan of your work. I'm like, wow, well, that's kind of cool. I'm being spotted like that and recognized at a festival like this. And we just we locked in, and I was engaged with the work he was talking about. He was talking about a project called The Riddle House, and it's like this haunted house story, like an Amityville kind of story. And it got me. I mean, he hooked me from the second he spoke about it, and with his partner Eric Geisler from I can't remember the name of the studio, but it's right next to Paramount Studios. So they invited me over for a meeting, and I went to the studio, and they were telling me about the project. And Edward's he's so electric. The guy is like, dude, you are the character. I'm like, perfect, man. You know, let's knock this film out. And he's like, listen, man, yeah, we're still in casting, and your character. He's like, once again, like this rock star kind of guy, and he's like, you have a love interest. You have someone that works with you. Just basically, you know, the female version of this character. I'm like, yeah, man. And he's like, do you know anybody? And of course I always mention my favorite. I was like, yeah, Tracy Fairway. He's like, you know Tracy Fairway? I'm like, yeah, of course, man. And he's a huge fan of Tracy's work. So this has all worked in my favor, man. Everything is working in my favor. So Tracy's, dude. You know, it's right time, right place, right attitude, and you know, and just connecting. And the script is written, dude, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, once this is all locked and loaded with all of our contracts, it's not just a one-off, it's a two-picture deal, Riddle House and Riddle House 2. Also, my friend Lucky Harmon they've been talking to him too, because he's got like this cool music vibe. He's also an actor. I think he was on your show not too long ago.
Yes, he was.
So, good guy back east. And all that is, like I said, Edward, I can't say enough about, man. He's a strong guy. He's a driven producer. The writing is amazing. I mean, Tracy will tell you, I will tell you that, or any actor will tell you, if you've read enough scripts, you know when you see gold, and it's written super, super strong, super well, and it's intriguing. I mean, you can just read it, and you can visualize. That's what I tell my agent. If I can't see anything mind's eye-wise, then it's not gripping me. It doesn't mean it's not good. It's just that it's not for me. I read the first five pages of The Riddle House, and I had to do it. And I'm not just because Tracy's in it, I just had to do it. So, we're looking forward to it. We're trying to shoot this.
Yeah.
I think the producer said, mid to late January, man, in Hollywood.
Yeah, man, you said the first five pages. So, I mean, is that something you find typically with scripts, that it's basically the first five pages that either make or break it for you?
Yeah, you know, there's kind of an industry standard with like agents. I've heard that, you know, they say usually the first 10 to 20 pages. The 20 pages is already deep into the script. If you're not hooked by 20, I mean, you know, what's the point of even you're reading? For me, like anybody else, you know, always short of time. So first five pages might be a little too short, but I was gripping, you know, I was hanging on to every word after the first five pages. 10 pages is usually it, man. Yeah, I know that for a fact. I mean, my agent will tell you, man, first 10 pages has to be strong, and, you know, it's cool, because, I mean, you can't wait and read to, like, page 90. I mean, that's not going to work. You know? You got to set the stage, man. You got to set the stage, and it's almost like if the curtains have just been pulled back, now start acting, and that's what I want to see. So, yeah, I mean, really, Riddle House, I mean, first of all, the name is cool, and, you know, the setting is cool, and he said something about an Amityville horror kind of haunted house thing, and I was like, you know what, man, I want to do this. And, of course, you know, working next to Faraway, it's going to be so much fun. We've been talking about doing a project for years, and this is the one. So, you know, we're excited. We're excited. And I'll get Tracy on your show one day, man, and, you know, we can all talk, but The Riddle House, we're psyched. Like I said, that's a two-picture deal. And then we talked about Hide and Seek. We talked about Coffin. Yeah, dude, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, like I said,
So talk about this. Talk about, you know, what roles are you most likely to turn down?
Non-paying gigs? I don't know. you know what? As
material.
An actor, William, I will tell you, as an actor, and any actor that's really into acting will tell you that you don't turn anything down, man. I mean, we just want to act. I mean, if I could work for free, man, and live, I would work for free. I love character acting. I'm good at that. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it in a cocky way. It's just confidence, man. I know what I'm good with, and I know what I'm not good with. I mean, and, you know, I love trying to breathe life into a character that I would never, ever be in real life. And, I mean, a lot of the stuff I do, of course, there's kind of a mirror side to me on it. But, like, if you watch Trick and Coffin, I mean, I built that character on a night that I was super sick. I got the script and I couldn't put it down, and my voice was like totally shot from laryngitis, and I was sweaty, and I was just like very breathy, and I built my character from that. And when I started feeling better from the antibiotics, I'm like, why do I suck at this? Why is my character not so good anymore? And I realized it's because I was doing it under, you know, the weather. So I played Trick with a very deep voice, and he's like very breathy and very angry, and it's very, very mean. So that's how I built that. Yeah, I built that. I love character acting. It's cool. I don't think I would ever really turn anything down. I mean, my agent submits me for everything. But, you know, then of course, you know, if you've done enough work, you know, you get typecast into certain things, and I get called in only for that, because I know I'm gonna nail it. That's fine. I mean, if I don't nail it, at least give the casting director, you know, one hell of an impression, then she'll call me back, or he'll call me back, you know, for another project in the future. Yeah, so you plant seeds, man. But I don't think I, you know, like I said, I'm an actor. You know, it's a heightened reality, so I don't have any problem playing characters or different roles. I mean, I don't think I'd turn anything down, man. That's a good question. I don't think I would.
And how do you keep your instruments sharp?
I get that question a lot. You know, being in the field, man, being in the field, auditioning literally every other day, if it's self-tape or going into an office, you know, auditioning helps me keep sharp and focused. Auditioning is completely different from acting. I keep telling actors that, man. It's completely different.
Yeah.
You have to have your own method for auditioning. Yeah. It's not acting. And, you know, and people that come in with their own voice, and when I say their own voice, you know, I mean, like, the same choices over and over again for your auditions. Well, if you didn't book doing that before, why do you think it's going to change anything now? You know, it's, you have to always be one step ahead of yourself, and you have to have this clear view that, you know, they're not looking for the typical, but they are looking for something that's going to be palatable for Spoonfit America, I'm just going to say. And, you know, there's a love that you have to show them, you know? I mean, there's an electricity that you have to have with the choice of words you have in improv and the way your mannerisms are, the way you hold yourself, you know? It's tough, man. I mean, it's tough. And to keep your instrument sharp, it's like, it's a 24/7 thing, but you can't do acting 24/7. I mean, that makes you a boring actor and a boring person. Yeah, seriously, man. If that's all you talk about, that's all you do, step away from me, dude, because I don't want to talk to you, man. Seriously, that's the most boring thing ever. Solid actor. Yeah, dude, a solid actor or a solid person has all these facets, you know? It's not just about
everything.
What I booked. Yeah, bro, you get it. You're an actor too, man. So,
yeah.
You know, you use everything and you accept it, you know, and you enjoy life, man. It's people are like, oh, it's such a tough gig. Yeah. So is anything else. I mean, you just got to put the work into it. And there's no recipe for success, but you can create little successes, man. You can enjoy that, man. And people see that, they know that you're enjoying yourself and enjoying your work. And something's going to break sooner or later, you know. You just got to stay positive, man.
You do. So you mentioned self-taping. That's very, very important. So how do you go about that? Do you use your iPhone or do you go to a friend's studio? How you do it?
It depends on where I am and who I'm with. Back in Baltimore or in D.C. You're going to Baltimore, actually. My favorite, you know him, Ken Arnold. He's one of the best for self-tapes. He's got a great studio, and you know, I totally recommend him because he doesn't just read with you. He actually acts with you. He wants you to book the gig. So he's always been great for me whenever I'm back east. Here on the West Coast, I have several houses that I can go to. I mean, remember, there are a lot more avenues and, like, places to do stuff like this. Self-tape, they have places specifically for self-taping. And then, you know, some of the actors will act with you instead of just giving you a cold read. But if it's stuff that I can do myself, I mean, I have my own video. I have a GoPro. You know, I'm obsessed with my GoPro. So
yeah.
I'll put my stuff on GoPro. Yeah, man, and you know, have somebody read with me, friend, family, whoever, man. And but yeah, self-taping, you know, the world of casting has changed, man, in the past 5 years. 5.5, 6 years ago, I mean, acting really was more of a a VIP club, you know, getting into the world of acting. It was very VIP. You had to go to casting. You had to go. There was no self-tape and there weren't any of these breakdowns in public, and it was very exclusive. And if you were in the union, my God, you were part of the top 10. You know, it was like very, very cool. And it was a slick time. I mean, things have changed. So yeah, of course, now everybody doing self tape and the breakdowns being out in general public, it's so much more difficult for actors that, you know, fancy themselves as actors and not just these renegade weekend warrior actors that, you know, submit their shit. So it's like, dude, it's not as exclusive, but, you know, of course, a real actor will always be noticed, you know. And so self-tape, getting back to your self-tape, yeah, man, you have full control of your self-tape. If it's due by Thursday and today is Monday, keep doing it until it's great. Don't just send the first one you put out, man. You control the stage. You're the director, you're the writer, you're the casting, your hair and makeup. Make sure you look good. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time, but you know what, man? You know, if you book the gig, you're gonna be happy you invested that time to get it done.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, absolutely. You gotta be your own hero and do the work. So let's switch gears and go back in the past a little bit. And the great character actor Danny Trejo, and also Billy Baldwin, you and Patrick were in Chronology. And how was that experience?
Awesome. Chronology was a blast. I got to work with all those guys. Yes, Danny and Billy Baldwin, William Baldwin, John James. And, of course, some of the cast from Coffin was involved. And, of course, Laura James, a very good friend of mine, she is a model from America's Next Top Model, but she has transitioned into the world of acting. She's a super strong actress. We also put her in Coffin, too. But it was fun. Chronology was great. We shot that in Greenville, South Carolina. And the writers, Kip Tribble and Derek Wingo from Coffin, put this project together. And we teamed up with some international producers, and we got it shot in Greenville, and we flew Danny in, and we flew William in, and Mr. John James in, and man, it was something else, man. It was bringing Hollywood into Greenville, South Carolina. If you've never heard of Greenville, South Carolina, there's nothing in Greenville, South Carolina. So we were like, it was celebrity status everywhere you went, man. But the movie Chronology was phenomenal, and there's several plans for it, man, several plans for it. And I know it already had its Eastern European premiere, and it's released out there. It's, you know, that territory is completely different from, of course, the United States. So, you know, it was released there. They have several plans to do stuff here. I'm not at liberty to say what's going to happen to it, but I'm really hoping the plans that they have come to fruition, because then you'll be able to see this a lot and on a platform that I'm a big fan to. When I say a platform, you know, like example, like Amazon Prime or Netflix or, you know, one of those platforms. But this would turn us into household names. So very excited. Chronology is one hell of a story, and you'll love it, man. It's the race against time within time, and how lost time has really affected us and how it doesn't affect us. It's very deep, man. Very cool.
Yeah, man, a race against time. Wow, that's wow, man. So I'm gonna go to one of those what if questions. So, would you rather work steadily in TV, say like network TV, like a Big Bang Theory or something like that, or would you rather be a movie star?
I've had that question asked several times. I'm, you know, by trade, man. I started on TV. You know, from the first gig I ever booked, All My Children, and learning that that was theatrical work on television, that was not easy. And then, of course, stuff like, you know, I had my recurrings on Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill, and then, of course, Gotham, and all the TV shows I've done. I love TV timing. There is such a difference between television timing and film timing, and I'm just kind of cut out, man, for television. Yeah, I'm cut out for television. Because I'm a fast talker to begin with, but I can relay the information without it being convoluted, you know, and I'm pretty quick at memorizing. That's another great thing that actors should always work on. So my short-term memory is awesome. They change stuff on set all the time. I love television only because I like that quote-unquote household name thing. Of course, celebrity status on the larger picture would it be to do major motion or huge indies. I know the difference. I get it. I do both only because my agent, you know, she's very cool about submitting me to everything. But if I had a choice, I love that whole communal thing where you get to work every day, like on a studio lot, you see everybody and everybody becomes close or not close. I've seen that happen too. I love that because it's just, well, it's very steady. When you do film, you know, you work maybe 5 to 6 weeks with an entourage of actors and people. And then you tip your hat and say goodbye, and you work on the next project. It's kind of sad. You know, you'll see them for the premiere and everything, but, you know, it's a take. I mean, you know, you can have celebrity status on television, too. It's just not, you know, the film status. I get it. But to answer your question, I like television. You know, everyone, you know, I know many people that will disagree with me right now, but I'm more of a TV actor. I mean, yeah, I've done my stuff with Coffin and stuff, and I've got more work to do. And I like the expression of expanding lines and pregnant pauses that you can't do on TV, because pausing with the right way, with not blinking or blinking enough, man, is just enough to like scare someone or make them question what's going on next. So film, yeah, you have a lot more liberty. Yeah, you have a lot more liberty in film. I get that, but I'm quick, man. So, you know, television, I mean, if I had the chance, I'd love to work back at Screen Gem Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina. That's my favorite soundstage that I worked on One Tree Hill with, and Dawson's, of course. And I love Brightsville Beach. I mean, it's just so much fun. Television rock, man.
Now, because, you know, you said that All My Children was with stage work on TV. So talk about the differences, like, you know, the picking up of cues and the pacing and everything with the soap opera as opposed to other work.
Yeah. I was super lucky, man. I mean, I was a complete, like, anti-rebel at NYU. And I remember taking classes at the Actors Studio. It was amazing. I mean, I learned a lot. I also learned that nobody liked me. So I was, like, seriously, when they had dialogue, I never had a partner. And the coach would always be like, listen, man, just read it. Yeah, start making a monologue, find my own way. Well, we would have scouts time and again in the amphitheater. And there was somebody that came in, and, you know, you're just doing your thing. You don't even pay attention to who's walking in or walking out. But at the end of the class, my coach, Mr. Tyson, came up to me and he said, listen, man, we had somebody here. They'd like to read you. Now, we know that at NYU, you're not allowed to read for projects while you're trying to get your degree. It's just how it is. But they made a special exception with me because it was from Joan Diancheco's office from ABC. And the card said, All My Children. I'm like, I'm reading for All My Children? And he's like, yeah. I go, is that a soap opera? He's like, you don't even know? I said, yeah. He's like, it's a soap opera. So I went over there, and they've been trying to cast this character for apparently a few weeks, almost a month. And I came in with this raw energy because it was really one of my first auditions. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even know how to slate. Yeah, it was just like I was just taking classes, and they loved me. And I looked the role. That's another big thing too. You can be the greatest actor if you don't look right for the role, you're not going to get it. So I looked the role. I was the right height requirement. That's another thing too. Some actors are very, you know, weird about their height. You know, so I had all that going for me, and I nailed it. I booked it, and I had, like, over, what, 66 episodes, man, as recurring Seth, as Susan Lucci's nephew. But it was fun, man. And that was right off the bat. So getting to soap opera acting, not easy. People bash soap operas. I don't know why. These actors are super talented. They read. I mean, they can memorize a plethora, so much dialogue within minutes. And, you know, you're not married to the lines, by the way, for any soap opera, just to let you know. You're not married to the lines, but you've got to get that point across, and it better sound intelligent, and you better not sound like yourself. You have to sound like the character. You may as well memorize the lines. So, you know, I'd get there literally. I was at the bottom of the totem pole. I was playing a Pine Valley High School student next to Kelly Ripa when she was a Pine Valley High School student. And we would get there. I would get there at least at 6:30 in the morning. 6:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Every morning. They wouldn't use me until like 2. Yeah. But you had to get there as part of your contract. And I was just happy to be there. They would do your blocking. They would show you where to go. They, you know, you do it a few times for camera. And then when everybody was cool with it, you go through hair and makeup, and then you break for lunch. I don't know why they did it that way, but they always did it that way. And then you would film. And then you would film until like maybe 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Yeah, so you're there pretty much – I was there at least 10 to 11 hours every time I had to work. But there was so much gratification, man, because you would leave 66th Street, you know, 350 66 where ABC is. And you'd come out the door and you'd have people asking for your autograph. And I never before any of this ever had that. And I was like, really? You know who I am? And they're like, yeah. I was like, wicked. So it was cool, man. It was a nice taste of saying, we know who you are. And you know what? Thank you for like giving this your time. And it was something else. I mean, it's neat talking to people at, you know, on the other side of the studio lot wall. That was another thing too. It's same with Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill. You'd have people coming up asking for your picture. So that was fun, but that's not what you work for. You know, you work to work. So that's just another little added bonus. But it's nice getting the attention time and again. It can be a little too much sometimes, but it's fun.
No.
But but soap opera work, dude, is not easy. And let me compare that to prime time. Prime time, you get a script. And it's very rigid, and it's like, these are the words. The writer will shoot you if you don't say them right. These are your words, and you are married to these words. You're not going off on an improv. Nobody wants to hear how talented you are when it comes to that. So that's that. And, you know, it's very synthetic. You know, it's not as organic as, like, theatrical acting. But there is definitely, dude, there's definitely there's a recipe to it, man, and I love television acting. I don't know. I've always been a TV actor. I just love television.
Right. So, but you have to talk about now. There is the basic cable, like Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, and things like that. I mean, so would you think you would lean more toward the those kind of shows, or you know, could you see yourself liking and being and enjoying more the kind of the network shows?
Right. I've always done the network shows because, remember, those were the only things that were available, I guess, when I was racing around the country. You know, I wanted to put a recurring somewhere, and that's what I got. Right. So now you have all these new shows, and yes, all these renegade indies, Walking Dead, Stranger Things, you know, all these amazing shows. And yeah, of course, my agent's leaning me toward that because that's more character acting. That's more film-driven style television, if that makes any sense. They kind of break the line, you know, like stuff like Stranger Things. I keep talking about it. I've been auditioning for the show now, and I'm working on my ninth episode. I mean, my ninth audition for the show. I'll book it sooner or later. Yes, they don't go with the book, like OTH, like One Tree Hill. I mean, they don't use the same rules, man. They make their own rules, and that's fun. Yeah, I would totally. I mean, of course, I lean towards those shows. I would love to do those shows, and I will eventually. I mean, it's just a matter of time. You gotta get in with the casting director. They've gotta love you to keep calling you back. And if you don't book, I mean, your job is to audition. You know, actors have to remember, man, you're not an actor at this level. You're an auditioner, and you got to be the best at what you do, man. And just because you're the best, it doesn't mean you're going to book it. So you have so much against you. But as long as you leave knowing that you did great and everybody says, you know what, we're going to call you back, and then you know what? You've done good. You know, your job, you did your job. So, yeah, Walking Dead, Vampire Diaries, well, that's network, but yeah, Stranger Things, all those, you know, Netflix kind of shows, and you know, there's, you know, Amazon Prime shows. Yeah, hell yeah, man, I'm totally down for those shows too.
Yeah, now you said you were on your ninth audition for Stranger Things. I mean, that's amazing. I hear so many stories of actors that go in for, like, you know, up to like, you know, 15, 20 auditions. I mean, why does it take so many?
Well, you want to hear something, man? Dawson's Creek. I auditioned for Dawson's Creek 28 times. 28 times. Yeah, dude. I auditioned from episode 2 all the way to the last season. And I'm going to use myself as an example. If I did not continue to try to audition, or, you know, get these auditions from my agent and the casting directors, the Fincannons down in Wilmington, they're the most beautiful casting directors on the planet. If they didn't believe in me and kept calling me in, I swear to you, I never would have booked the show, because I was on my last straw. On the 24th audition, I told my agent, dude, screw you, man. I'm not going down anymore. I just don't feel like auditioning for it. I'm not going to book this show. And he's like, at the time, my old agent was like, no, man, go in. So I read for this, like, young teacher. And I was like, that's not me. I didn't book it. And then the following audition, the 25th or whatever it was, I auditioned for, like, this kind of like this frat party kind of asshole. Like, he was, like, kind of mean. And I didn't book it. And I'm like, this is terrible. Then the final audition was for a junior stockbroker. And it was a combination of kind of like my teacher role that I read for and having that arrogance of that frat boy. And I put that together. They saw that, and I nailed it. And so instead of having a one episode with Dawson's, it turned into an 8-episode recurring. So you never say no to auditions, man. So, yeah, if it takes that long, it takes that long. Stranger Things, I'm dying to audition. I mean, I'm dying to book it. Yeah, I'm on my ninth. But Carmen Cuba is a phenomenal casting director, and she knows what she likes and what the show likes. It's not always up to her. Remember, when you do episodic, they always work with a new director. Every episode's done by a new director, or every other episode. So they don't know who you are. The casting director knows who you are, but the person that's looking for talent for their episode, they don't know who you are most of the time. So you have to gain the faith and the trust from the casting director that's doing a show, and then they will say, listen, I'm going to bring in my favorite five, and he's one of them, or she's one of them, and then hopefully the director is going to fall in love with you, and boom, you're going to get the job.
Yeah, absolutely. So I see Patrick Barnett is on the switchboard. Now, Patrick has been in so many projects. I mean, he's been in was it Star Trek Voyager? He's been in The Shield. He's been, and of course, he was in Coffin too. So we got a lot to talk about. And he loves the American Songbook. He's a great singer. So I'm gonna bring him on the air. So, Patrick,
what's going on, William? How are you, man? Good to hear you, Paisan.
Hi, John. Nice to have you aboard, man. Nice to
My
have
man,
you here, dude.
Johnny Alonzo. Thanks for having me on the show, William. I've been listening to you guys gasp a little bit now.
Absolutely, Patrick. So I see you had this big gig, man, at the Baronese over the
weekend. We had a gig this
Valley
Saturday
Glen.
Night. And, you know, I was in the middle of a song, and who walked in but Mr. Paisan himself, Johnny Alonzo, walked in, and I said hi to him, and then I turned to the drummer, the great Billy Paul. Billy Paul turned to me and was like, he's like, who's that guy? I recognize him. He looks a little bit like Paul McCartney. Paisan had this cool sort of Beatles jacket on. But anyway, I had a gig at Peroni's, and, you know, I'm a singer, and, you know, I'm an actor and singer, performer, and I sing around Los Angeles and, you know, around the city, and occasionally we do a gig out of town. And I've been singing at Baroni's. Is a really, really cool old school Italian restaurant. It could really be anywhere in the United States. It's really, really mostly has that East Coast vibe, that kind of, you know, New York, Baltimore kind of East Coast hardcore, almost like you walked into a scene from The Sopranos or something like that. So it's a really, really classic old place. And actually, it's got quite a history. I mean, it's been around, that building's been around for like 40, 50 years, but they actually shot, and this is cool, when I first started singing there, somebody told me this, that they actually shot the movie Fast Times Ridgemont High at that place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
So they shot it in the scene where my brain, my memory fails me at the moment, but the young guy who's, you know, going out with Jennifer Jason Leigh, he takes her out to dinner and he loses his wallet. He calls
him.
So it's the restaurant scene where they have dinner is where they shot, you know, where they shot Fast Time. So anyway, we had a gig, we had a great time, and I sing jazz, like, you know, Sinatra stuff, and I put in an album some years back, and I've been recording, you know, some new material, working on a new record, and gigging all over the place, and having a blast, and, you know, we did, it's been a lot of fun, you know, Johnny, I've been listening to you guys, and, you know, we had a blast doing, you know, we go way back, you know, I mean, Coffin 1 was in 2010, so, I mean,
yeah,
that film is pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, when you consider that it's been almost 10 years since the first, and then we were lucky enough to come back and do the second and bring, you know, basically brought the band back together, right? We had, you know,
nice.
A lot of the core members back, you know, like Johnny Trick was back, you know, and, you know, Kip Tribble and Derek and, you know, Sonny, the great Sonny Dench. So, you know, so Kip, you know, and Spencer Johnson, the great Spencer Johnson, you know, of the real independent film festival, the producer who's kind of, you know, was the one who put all this together. Spencer gave the green light, and, you know, Kip wrote it and cranked it out, and we had a blast. I mean, how much fun did we have, Paisan, huh?
Paisan, we had such a blast, and it was nice bringing in new blood, and, of course, bringing in the old salt. And, you know, I think, of course, we forgot to mention Robert Mukes, who was just amazing in the project.
Oh,
and
Mukes, unbelievable.
Yeah. And, you know, William, you know, Patrick will agree with me with this. When we go from project to project, it's like you get to really meet some really interesting people, man, and you learn from these people, and they're learning from you. Everybody's sponging off each other. It's so much fun. And I think Coffin 3, when we orchestrate this new this new show, it's going to be intense. I mean, Coffin 3 is going to go balls to the wall, completely different direction.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, folks, I think we have a caller here, number 230. I'm going to bring them on the air, see if they have a question. You're on the air. Do you have a question?
Hi. Hey, Zion. Hi. Hey, Patrick. It's your girl, Jessie, from Greenville.
Hey.
Jessica. All right. Okay, Jessie, what's your question?
So have y'all settled on where Coffin 3 is going to happen yet?
Say it again.
I'll let Johnny go first.
Okay. Yeah, say that again, Jesse.
Have y'all settled on where Coffin 3 is going to be at yet?
Oh, okay. Yes and no. I know that we've been location scouts have been looking into, of course, the Los Angeles area. Because I can't give away anything, and Patrick will agree with it. There's a very specific look for this intro, and mm-hmm. a very specific look for you know, like anything else, man, like the location almost becomes a character. So this is very it's intense. I mean, it of course this film could be shot in Greenville. It can be shot in your area, but I'm not sure yet. You know, like I said, we still got to talk with a couple other people, and if we can make things work out, it might be in LA. But if we can get the tax breaks, we're going to go back down to the South. Yes.
Awesome. All right.
Very good. Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Jesse.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
All right, guys.
Bye, Dom.
Okay. So, Johnny, I'm going to throw this out there. How did you first meet Patrick?
Great question. Once I screen tested with Kip and I nailed Coffin, I did, you know, me being an East Coast actor at the time, I didn't really know a lot of actors that were in the mix. And I've heard of Patrick Marnette. I mean, you know, he's been around the great scene of auditions and, you know, the usual suspects, as I like to call them. So I get on set, and really the first time I got to meet Patrick was the first day of filming. And we hit it off like no other. I was like, this guy, man, this guy's got, he's got that East Coast, New York, Jersey edge. And we just hit it off. And mind you, you've seen Coffin, you're a fan. Patrick and I have a ton of dialogue together. So if we didn't have the chemistry that we had right off from a jump, it would have been bad news. But no, dude, we love each other like brothers, and we got through this, man. Because we knew that, you know, if there's going to be suspense, we've got it. If there's going to be humor, we got it. If there was going to be anger, it was all there. And we just played off each other's, you know, strengths and weaknesses. And I love working with Patrick. I wish we had more in Coffin 2, but I can say this, man. When Coffin 3 is doctored up, man, don't think for 1 second I'm not going to put in my own two bits and say, no, man, Jack, Sam's and Trick, they need a lot more. A lot more in 3. Tons more in
3. Yeah. Now, Patrick, I got to throw out there. So now –
yeah.
You see a good chemistry between actors. Is that something that's there or is something that's developed?
Well, I mean, you know, I think it varies from, you know, from project to project, and sort of it's kind of on a one-off basis for me in my experience. I mean, I find that, I mean, with Johnny, for example, I mean, we spoke, I mean, I'm trying to remember. I think we exchanged messages before we shot. I think it was sort of like, hey, I'm Johnny, I'm Pat. You know, I don't even think we spoke. And then we got to the location. We were shooting in this location at this Mexican restaurant in Downey called Casa Cabral. Wow, that's my memory served me that time. Jesus.
But in any event, holy mackerel. Yeah,
anyway,
good job.
Check it out. Casa Cabral in Downey. Anyway. And great Mexican restaurant. So we met at the location, and you know, we got there at like, you know, 5, 6 p.m. They were serving, you know, serving dinner. And then, you know, Kip and Derek, who I've known for years, you know, I mean, I knew that, you know, Johnny and I were, you know, we had a lot of stuff, you know, he and I, most of our scenes in the movie were with one another. I mean, very few scenes with other folks. I mean, it was not 80% of what I did in the film was with Johnny, you know, a lot of driving scenes and such. So we were, you know, we just met, and it was like, hey, Clyde's on. Hey, I'm Johnny, I'm Pat, da, da, da. And then Kip and Derek just looked at us and said, guys, you ready? And you know, we looked at each other and said, we're ready, thumbs up. We jumped in the car, and we literally, we shot the first day of Coffin. We actually shot the most intense scenes in the movie where he's, not to give it away for people who haven't seen it, but one of the more intense scenes in the movie where, you know, my wife, you know, is in a jam anyway, but it was crazy. It was, we had to go to literally from 0 to 100 in,
wow,
in a, in with like literally with the firing of a gun. It was crazy. So, it was, it's, you know, I found that with certain people, you know, you literally just hit it off and that helps. And then if you have that, I mean, that's, you know, that's like lightning in a bottle, right?
Oh
yeah, there you go.
That's gold right there. If you have it, because you click. I mean, it, the same thing was with like Bruce Davison on Coffin, you know, Coffin 1, and you know, working with Bruce,
you know, I mean, he's such a brilliant actor, but beyond him being a brilliant, I remember when Johnny and I met him on set. I mean, we were jazz. I mean, we were all, everybody, you know, in the production was, you know, thrilled.
I think we couldn't believe we were
working with, you know, Academy Award nominee.
All right, guys, we have the switchboards are lighting up. So let's bring in number 413 and see if they have a question. Okay, 413, what's your question?
Hello.
Who's this?
My name's Irv. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm good friends with Johnny Alonzo.
Hey,
Paizan. Paizan, how are you, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for chiming in, man. That's great.
I've been listening to you guys, and Johnny and I go way back, so I've been following his career. I guess what I want to share with your listeners, as I watch Coffin 1 and Coffin 2, Johnny, you've worked on like different levels of production, from network TV to the big series to the independent film to the guerrilla making independent film. What's cool about Johnny, because I've worked with him on some of our, you know, in the early days, the low budget stuff, Johnny's always present. Johnny's always like prepared and present and very generous as an actor. And I noticed the good chemistry with you and your co-stars in Coffin. It seemed like everybody was like in it to win it. And it was nice to see that on a movie where it's not like $100 million Hollywood budget, where everyone's just kind of going on name recognition, where you're like, I'm watching some of these actors that I've never seen before, and I'm buying it. I'm that suspended belief that, you know, every director wants to get. So, well, my question is for Johnny and his listeners: how is it working with, you know, the different levels of people, and what do you give and take to these guys?
Okay. First of all, you should be my PR guy from now on. You're fantastic.
Well, I am. I'm a big fan. I'm your friend, but I'm a big fan because most people don't know how hard Johnny works. I mean, he put more miles on his cars than anybody I know, because he's out there constantly in the grind, auditioning, trying to get things done, and now he's getting the rewards, and I'm happy and I'm proud for him.
Ah, dude, you're the greatest, man. You know, getting to your question, what is it like, you know, working with these actors at different levels? And I mean, you know,
right,
like, I guess from the indies to
and
the
not
big.
Of talent, not of talent, of like you're working on where like money and concerns of schedule are different. Because look, the guys you worked with in Coffin, those guys were awesome. The guy that had his wife in the box, what's the actor's name? He's who's on the phone right now. He's awesome, dude. That guy like blew me away.
Dude, here's the thing, and Patrick will tell you, man, you know, at all levels,
tell you,
actors, all actors that are, you know, that are hungry. And actors that just cannot get enough. It's like a heroin addiction, man. You just cannot get enough. You want this to work, and you want it to be that strong and that intense, or that lighthearted, or that comedic. You know, when you find actors that are true to the talent and true to the business and true to themselves, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an independent, you know, low budget actor, or, you know, a high dollar multi. Because yeah, we've all worked with these guys. I've worked with the greats. I've worked with huge names, and I've also worked with unknowns. But I've seen a similarity, a common thread between those actors, and that's the one thing, is it's the want, man. And if you don't have the want, man, that's when those guys become lethargic. That's when, you know, it might be a
there
little harder
go.
To work with.
Did Kip give you guys the, you know, because he's in it, he wrote it, directed it, he's one of the leads in it. Is it more difficult to work with a guy that's like so close to, because, you know, that's basically his baby? Did he give you guys the freedom to do, because that opening scene in Coffin 1 is if no one has seen it, go grunt that thing. Do the opening scene at, you know, at Sylmar Avenue, because I know the location, was brilliant.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I was going like, oh my God, that it was so amazing. So did Kip really give you guys the freedom to like to play with each other?
You know, Patrick, answer that one. You got a good one on that.
Yeah, Patrick, I mean, Johnny's my boy, like, because you were so good in that. I mean, as menacing as Johnny was, you really were feeling the thing. So, I mean, how did that play out? Did Kip let you guys just kind of play tennis with each other?
Yeah, Patrick,
and
why don't you answer that question?
Yeah, you know, listen, thanks for chiming in, man, and thanks for the kind words.
Yeah.
And really, you know, appreciate the support. Yeah, I Johnny and I, you know, Kip and Derek, you know, Derek Wingo and Kip Tribble, you know, co-directed the first one. And basically, I mean, it was like eight pages, I think it was like seven or eight pages of dialogue. So it was literally done in one take. So so basically before we did the scene, they said, look, guys, we're just going to turn the camera on and we're going to follow you. It's going to be a handheld shot. and Keiko Nakahara, who was our amazing DP. She's phenomenal. She and the camera crew, they just followed us. So they gave us a lot of room to work and a lot of sort of free reign. And pretty much, I mean, aside from a couple of spots where they said we need you here, you know, on this line or we need you to cross here, Johnny and I pretty much, I mean, you know, we stuck pretty much to the script, but we kind of made it our own, and we kind of really sort of directed ourselves through the scene, obviously with the guys, Kip and Derek, but we made it our own. And
nice.
I mean, that was a pretty brutal scene because it went on for, I mean, it was intense from an acting standpoint.
I appreciate the time with you guys, because like I said, I'm a big fan of Johnny and Patrick. I think you're awesome. So I was listening in, enjoying the show, and I just wanted to call from a freezing cold Baltimore, Maryland, and just saying, hey, what's up in Hollywood?
Thanks for the call.
God bless you, man. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Faison.
Okay,
so
let's bring on number 421. Introduce yourself and ask your question. Okay, 421, you're on air. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Can you guys hear me?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, what's your name?
This is Kevin. Hey, Johnny. What's up?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, man. What's going on? Hey, Kevin.
Hey. Not much. Hey, listen. Irv, I've known Johnny forever since Baltimore.LA. And, you know, Johnny, love you. Love your work. Love everything about it. Got a chance to see the premiere, and it was a blast. So I'll be shorter than Irv. I don't have as eloquent of words as he does. But so my question is maybe one for, you know, audience and actors alike. With your character Trip, you know, he's deep and dark. How did you get yourself into that? Because you know, as a normal everyday person, you're not going to do the things he does, right? So how did you get yourself to that place? At least as far as I know. You know,
I was gonna say I might have a couple ex-girlfriends that might beg to differ, but let me answer you, Kevin, and then I'll also pass the torch to Patrick, because we're both character actors, and it comes down to this. As I said earlier, you know, you have to find inspiration for your characters. I don't care what your character is, and these rules apply to auditioning as well. If you come in just because you think you're pretty and you think that you're going to get it because you got great hair, dude, it ain't going to work. You need to bring something to the plate. And when I read Trick, you know, I was like, Jesus, what am I going to do? This guy's in a mask. How am I going to make this happen? You know, I'm working with this guy that was on Star Trek. How am I going to do that? And I'm freaking out. But I'm reading the script, and I fell in love with it. And as I told William earlier, I was riddled with, like, the flu. And, I mean, my voice was very raspy, and I was sweaty, and I was lethargic, and I was hunched over because I was, like, I didn't have any energy. Well, when I was reading the script, I utilized all of that, and my character just started forming. And I'm a very physical character. Like, you know, when I speak to someone, of course, like all of us, we all look at, you know, the other person in the eyes. But I'm very, very passionate about what I say. So I've learned in acting that every word, and I'll go round for round with anyone that disagrees with me, every word means something in the script. It could be the word the, it could be the word of, it could be the letter O. Everything means something. So I've learned that in order to put this together, I had to be menacing. Well, look, I'm a small guy. I'm only 5'8". I'm a 5'8", you know, about 129, 130 pounds. And I had to be menacing, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do everything with silence. And I'm going to do everything
Patrick,
with, you know, coming up with a spike word. Patrick, go for it.
Patrick, right. Go for it, yeah.
Hey, yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a great question. And, you know, for me, I didn't have time to think. I mean, I read the script. I worked on the script. I absorbed it. I did my work on it. I got to the set. And as I was kind of, you know, mentioning before, you know, just the conditions. We just had when you're shooting an indie film, the pulse, the electricity, I mean, you have X amount of time to get X amount of work done. So there's a drive, there's an urgency, and you got to get it done. So you got to get right to it. And you don't have time to shoot, you know, 5, 6, 7 takes. I mean, you do a master, you move in for a couple of singles, a couple of shots, and you're done, you move on. So you had, basically, so much of your work has to be done before, but as soon as I got there, I said, I don't have time to think. I mean, like, as soon as I, it was just like, boom, out of the gate, just in there. And I can't think about, am I this guy? I am this guy. And,
right,
and
that
that's,
was your
and that's how we won
right
it.
Away.
As soon as I got there,
there
I was
you go. There
Johnny's
you go.
Trick and play ball.
Thank you for the call, Kevin. All right, so we're down to about 2 minutes, guys. So in these last 2 minutes, I guess, Johnny, we'll start with you. Any parting words or anything else you want to promote, or websites, movies, and then Patrick will have you wrap everything up.
Yeah, man. Okay, I saw you just, a couple weekends ago, or like last week, whatever it was, at the Baltimore
Media
Web Fest.
Yeah, about a week ago.
That was fantastic. It was good. I travel so much, I don't even know where I am right now. But anyway, it was great seeing you there, and I thank you for inviting me back on the show. Click
absolutely.
On theshow.com, of course. Yeah, dude, I know that there's some footage of you behind the scenes with us at that amazing Creative Alliance. So once that episode's locked and loaded, I'll let you know. But, yeah, click on theshow.com. It's one of the hosting jobs that I do. Keep your eyes open for the Riddle House, because the Riddle House is going to be amazing. Amazing, amazing. Great cast, great ensemble. It's going to be awesome. What's it called? Coffin 3, of course. That's out. That's going to be in the works. But, you know, rent Coffin 2, man, so you can, you know, you're part of the clique. And you know what's happening. You can always find me on the IMDb, Johnny Alonzo. Of course, my johnnyalonzo.com website. Follow me on Instagram, guys. If anybody's listening, I want to see my followers go up. Johnny.Alonzo on Instagram and also Twitter, Johnny Alonzo. To you, Patrick.
Hey, guys. So, listen, thanks for tuning in, guys. And, guys, William, thank you so much for having me on the show. Paisan, the one and only Johnny Alonzo, ladies and gentlemen. You can find me on Facebook, guys, Patrick Barnett. My personal page, and then my page for music and acting and the like, Patrick Barnett Live, Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram with Patrick Barnett, Twitter as well. Go check Coffee 2 at a Redbox. We'll be in iTunes, Amazon Prime. We just sold it to a bunch of new territories, so it'll be in Europe soon. And listen, guys, I met a screenwriter years ago on a plane who told me he was a very young actor. I was just starting out, very successful guy. He said, listen, no matter how bad it gets or how desperate it might get for you, and just when you think you might want to give up, if you really love it, you got to do it. Passionate about it, and enjoy what you do. So listen, thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, man, and think it's talking about passion, you know, it's just been a real pleasure tonight. I really had fun. And I really learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, William, man. Appreciate it a
absolutely.
Lot. We'll see you. I'm going to get out to Baltimore next year, and we'll
nice.
Have to meet up.
Go,
oh, yeah. Man. We'll
oh,
go see the Ravens game.
Let's do it.
Sound like a plan.
All right, guys.
Okay, y'all have a good night and an amazing week.
Take
William,
care.
William, you do the
God
same.
Bless.
Thank you, brother.
Bye
now.
All right,
guys.
Man. Okay.
All right, Paisan.
Yes. All right, my dear listeners out in radio land, remember to do something for your career every single day and break a leg. Good night.
Under the dark you pacify me. Hold my breath. Take me down, I won't fight. Beat of my heart, you drum inside me. Somewhere my death makes the sound no one can find. I